hope you're spending some time outside of our Wednesday night lessons to reread these Proverbs and to try and commit at least one per week to memory. And if that's a little too much, if that's a little too daunting, tonight we're going to finish up chapter 10. And so now's your time to start, and you can say, well, I'm just going to do one per chapter then. And that'd be fine. That'd be great. So we're going to finish up chapter 10 this evening, and we've got a big chunk of verses. We're going to look at verse 19 through 32, so we're going to move pretty quickly through them. I won't break down every one for 30 minutes or anything like that. But there's really only three major themes covered in these verses, and we'll see that by the way they're laid out. And they're laid out in what's known as a chiastic structure. And what a chiastic structure is, or a chiasmus, is it refers to a reversal of the order of words in a parallel construction in order to create some special literary effect or to serve as a discourse boundary marker. Say, Brother Matt, I didn't know this was AP English class from high school all over again. It's not. And that sounds like a very fancy, you know, literary definition. But when you see it visually, when you see it laid out, it makes a lot of sense, and it's really easy. So hopefully this helps. This is sort of a picture of what the chiastic structure looks like in these verses. So verse 19 through 21 are going to deal somehow with speech. Verse 22 through 25 are going to deal with security in life. And then verse 26, we have this sort of this hinge verse about a sluggard, which is one of my favorite words again in Proverbs. It's fun to say sluggard. And then after verse 26, the pattern reverses itself. It swings back the other direction. So verses 27 through 30 deal once again with the theme of security. Then we finish this chapter with verse 31 and 32, which they deal with speech, which is where we all started. And so if you look up what a chiasmus is in a commentary or a dictionary, and they give you a visual layout, you'll probably see something like this, where the author will use this sort of stair-step approach to sort of offset the different topics, and then he'll come back the other direction, and he'll also indicate that with, you see, the letter A used for the first verses, and then the letter A with an apostrophe used for the last verses. It's just something that we do to sort of demonstrate that and show the connection and the relationship. So now that you know more than you ever wanted to know about a chiastic structure, we'll see that in our verses tonight. And those are going to be the three big themes that we see. So let's start with chapter 10, verse 19 through 21, and we'll read this set first. So verse 19, reading from the ESV, Solomon says, "When words are many, transgression is not lacking, but whoever restrains his lips is prudent. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is of little worth. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of sense." We'll stop there, and we'll just kind of read them as we have grouped them together. It's easy to see in these verses that theme of speaking. You see Solomon use terms like words, lips, tongue. So it's obvious what he's talking about here. And in verse 19, we'll start there, you see that it's pretty easy to see the contrast between someone who will not shut up and someone who is very cautious when they communicate. He says, when words are many, transgression is not lacking. A word that the ESV translates as lacking there literally means to cease or stop. Other translations, I like the way they say this, that transgression is unavoidable. Or the New English translation says, it's inevitable. This is the kind of person that we would say has no filter. If this person just continuously talks, it's inevitable that at some point his or her speech is going to betray. If you talk that much, you're eventually going to mess up. You're going to lie, maybe even accidentally. You're going to hurt someone's feelings, maybe even accidentally. You're going to say something unkind, ungracious, to borrow an expression from the New Testament, not seasoned with salt. It's going to happen. So be careful. Be careful about what, not just what you say, but even how much you say. But a wise person can restrain his lips and show some prudence, some common sense, some understanding. And this proverb really makes me think of James chapter 3. James chapter 3 and verse 2 says, "For we all stumble in many ways, and if any man does not stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body." When James used the word perfect here, he didn't mean sinless, but it has the idea of being complete, being mature, fulfilling what God has desired for you. Maybe we would use the word wise in Proverbs. The mature person, the complete person, the wise person can control his or her speech. Which proves what? It proves that there is also some self-control over the rest of the body, over the rest of the actions. So we don't want to be someone who has no filter, who can't stop talking. But show some caution in what you say and how much you say. In verse 20, we have another contrast here, and the contrasts are great. They're easy to see. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is of little worth. The question I want to ask about this verse is, why would Solomon contrast the tongue and the heart? It's easy to see why he contrasts, you know, righteous and wicked, and this and valuable silver versus something that's not worth anything. Why doesn't he say the tongue of the righteous and the tongue of the wicked? Exactly. Brother Stan said, because what's in the heart is what you say. Didn't Jesus say that? In Matthew chapter 12, Jesus said, "For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks." And so that's why Solomon makes this parallel, is to make it a little bit stronger and to dive a little bit deeper into what we say. What we say comes from inside of us. It comes from our hearts. I read a man one time who said, "What's down in the well comes up in the bucket." I've always remembered that very silly expression. But what's down in the well comes up in the bucket. If it's in your heart, it's going to eventually come out of your mouth. That's the source of it. And one author said that the heart is man's most fundamental problem. The tongue simply lets everyone else in on the fact. I like that. If it's in your heart, it's going to come out your mouth. Remember, we sort of talked about it last week when our last lesson, when Solomon talked about verse 18, "The one who conceals hatred has lying lips, and whoever utters slanders is a fool." Well, Solomon doesn't want us to hold hatred in or let it out. The answer was go back to verse 12 and have love. If it's in your heart, it's going to show up. Back in James chapter 3, you may remember that James talks about how terribly inconsistent it is when we use our words to bless God and then curse people that God created. They're made in His image. That's terribly inconsistent and it's wrong. What we should be using our words to do is to feed people. Look at verse 21 again. "The lips of a righteous man feed many, but fools die for lack of sense." Feed here is actually a shepherding term. It's not just feed the way we think of it as in eating something or, you know, giving someone food like that. But it has all the thoughts of what a shepherd did for a sheep. In fact, it's from the same word used in Psalm 23 when David said, "The Lord is my shepherd." Have you ever thought about your words as little shepherds? That's what they should be. Just like a shepherd with his sheep, he cares for them. He loves them. He provides. He protects. He guides. He encourages. Whatever needs to be done. That's what our words should be to people. The words of the righteous are like shepherds. They can show warmth, kindness, care, protection, guidance. You contrast that to a fool. His words are not only useless to others, but they're useless to himself. He dies for lack of sense. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our next set. Verse 22 through 25 gives us the theme of security. Look at verse 22. The blessing of the Lord makes rich, and he adds no sorrow with it. Doing wrong is like a joke to a fool, but wisdom is pleasure to a man of understanding. What the wicked dreads will come upon him, but the desire of the righteous will be granted. When the tempest passes, the wicked is no more, but the righteous is established forever. So these, to sort of summarize these groups as a whole, first, one author said, only through righteousness and wisdom can one attain real security in life. And you can talk about security sort of in different ways, but I like the way he summed it up. In verse 22, real quick, this could be taken as a reminder of how vain and useless our efforts are if they're not combined with God's grace and God's goodness and God's favor. You can work all you want. If God's not in it, it doesn't really matter. There's a psalm about that as well. Or it could indicate sort of what it means to truly be rich. That all the money in the world, you may have the biggest bank account in the world, but you're not truly rich if you don't have God's blessings. It's God's favor and God's blessings that make you truly wealthy. And so that may be what line B is indicating about how the Lord adds no, he adds no sorrow with it. The word sorrow has the idea of toil or work or unrest, something like that. And so the idea may be that with the blessings of God, there's no sorrow or pain or toil with that. It's peace. It's rest. It's joy. And so that may be what Solomon is indicating there. Moving into the next verse 23, I love the first part of this. Doing wrong is like a joke to a fool. You ever met anybody like that? Have you ever met someone who thought it was funny to do something wrong? Every one of us have. To laugh at wickedness means you're a fool. The word here in the verse for wrong is a really strong, intense word that Solomon uses. It points to extremely wicked, heinous schemes and crimes. It's used in the Old Testament for just horrific things, including what happened in Judges chapter 20. If you want to make a note, and you can read Judges chapter 20 later on, this word describes the sins of that chapter. If you laugh at wrongdoing, Solomon says, you're a fool. If that's your joy, your pleasure, if you find laughter in that, you are not living in wisdom. And sort of a side note, those aren't the people you want to hang around with either. People who think doing wrong is funny aren't the kind of friends you need. So what does this say about the world we live in when so many, many people praise sinful lifestyles? They laugh at it. It's pleasure to them. It's recreation to them. It may be politically correct, but it's biblically wrong. It's foolish. Foolish to laugh at wickedness. But you contrast that to the man of understanding in line B. This is someone who discerns right from wrong, who can understand good and evil, who knows truth and error. He finds his pleasure in wisdom. That's what he laughs at. That's what his joy is. That's what he desires and wants. Wisdom brings him joy. Maybe even the pursuit of wisdom, we would say. And where does wisdom come from? It comes from God. So we could sort of peel back the layers here and maybe ask this question. Do you find pleasure in sin or in God? Your answer proves whether you're wise or foolish. You can line up with the world, or you can seek God. And the way you answer that question also is going to affect sort of the next verse, in verse 24. It will affect what you fear and what you desire. Look at verse 24 again. What the wicked dreads will come upon him, but the desire of the righteous will be granted. The idea here is that people anticipate things. The wicked people have this fearful anticipation. Righteous people have a different sort of anticipation. A wicked person lives in dread or in fear, and we could take that in a lot of different ways. Maybe they're fearing the police. Maybe they fear being caught. Maybe they fear the judgment of God because they do know what they're doing is wrong. They just don't fear God enough to stop, but they do fear the judgment a little bit. What the wicked dreads is going to happen. You cannot escape the judgment of God. But you contrast the dread of the wicked to the desire of the righteous. That's also going to happen. That's also going to be granted. You say, well, what is the desire of the righteous, Brother Matt? You know, how long you got? There could be a whole sermon series about that. But I think I could summarize it by saying the righteous person desires the blessings and fellowship of God. That's what a righteous person wants. Fellowship with God. Guess what? If you desire that, it's going to happen. Isn't that great? What did Jesus say in the Sermon on the Mount in one of the Beatitudes? Blessed are those that hunger and thirst after righteousness. What will happen to them? They'll be satisfied. They'll be filled. Isn't that great? This section ends in verse 25. When the tempest passes, the wicked is no more, but the righteous is established forever. And a lot of people, if you study this, see a connection between this proverb and the way Jesus ended the Sermon on the Mount. If you remember in Matthew chapter 7, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus gives us this, I say, a larger proverb, a little parable, a story type thing. And he says, if you hear my words and you obey them, then you are like a wise man who built his house upon a rock. And when the rains came and the winds came and the floods came, the house stood. Because there was a good foundation for that house. But what was the contrast? If you hear my words and you don't obey them, then he likened you to a fool who built his house on sand. And when the rains descended and the floods rose and the winds came, that house fell because there was no foundation. And Jesus even said, great was the fall of it. I think it's easy to see that connection between Jesus' words there and what Solomon said here. So you can be a wicked fool. You can have sorrow in life, fear, dread, ultimately destruction. Or you can enjoy the peaceful security of a life founded and built upon God's wisdom. Upon listening to Him and obeying Him, receiving His blessings. The choice seems pretty obvious. And hopefully it is to us. But we know we live in a world that loves darkness rather than light. All right, let's move on to the next verse. I love this verse. This might be the one I choose to memorize out of this section. Verse 26 says, like vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to those who send him. So this is sort of the hinge verse before we start reversing ourselves and going back. And this is a different type of proverb, isn't it? This is not one of those contrast proverbs, if you still have your sheet. This is a comparison proverb. We would call it a simile in English because it uses the word like to compare things that they don't really seem alike, but we're comparing them. There's some overlap that Solomon wants us to see. Obviously, a lazy sluggard is not actually vinegar. He's not actually smoke. But what's the overlap? Well, laziness and vinegar to the teeth and smoke in the eyes, they're all very irritating. And I would even say painful would be okay. Laziness is as irritating as vinegar in your mouth and smoke in your eyes. I was grilling hamburgers last Saturday. And I opened the grill and I got a face full of smoke and it burned my eyes. And I had to just step away and just kind of close my eyes and just take the pain for a minute. There's nothing else I could do. It burned. And made me think of this proverb. I sort of chuckled after it was over with, once the pain was gone. And I thought, man, that's a perfect illustration, Solomon. Because laziness, if you send someone to do a job and they are lazy, to use one of our own expressions, doesn't that burn you up? It's so irritating. And that's what Solomon is saying here. Don't be a person who irritates others with laziness. Work hard. It's biblical to work hard. All right, let's move on to our... We're sort of swinging back now the other direction in our structure here. You'll see in verse 27 through 30 that the same theme of safety and stability and security. Look at verse 27. The fear of the Lord prolongs life, but the years of the wicked will be short. The hope of the righteous brings joy, but the expectation of the wicked will perish. The way of the Lord is a stronghold to the blameless, but destruction to evildoers. The righteous will never be removed, but the wicked will not dwell in the land. We'll stop there before our last couple of verses. Verse 27 gives us that general principle that someone who fears God is going to live longer than someone who is wicked. Yes, we can think of exceptions. We can think of good people dying young and wicked people living a long time. Remember, these are proverbs. This is generally true. It doesn't mean that we can't find exceptions. But generally speaking, someone who fears God, who lives righteously, morally, follows God's commands and God's ways, going to live longer than someone who lives wickedly. Sin can cut your life short in a lot of different ways. There are a lot of things that sin can bring in your life that can shorten it. Whereas if you're serving God and living for Him and fearing Him, He can bless you with long life. Didn't He promise to do that with the ancient Israelites, actually? One of the commandments came with a promise. Do you remember which one it was? Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the earth. And so for the ancient Israelites, they could definitely hold on to this promise if they would fear the Lord and obey in honoring their parents. There's going to be a blessing of long life there. If you're wicked, no guarantee there. It'd be cut short. Verse 28, the hope of the righteous brings joy, but the expectation of the wicked will perish. This seems to really parallel verse 24. And that idea of what different people anticipate and what they look forward to or what they fear. So there's a similarity there. Verse 29 then talks about the way of the Lord. The way of the Lord is a stronghold to the blameless, but destruction to evildoers. People understand this phrase, the way of the Lord, differently. Some people think it refers to the way God runs the world, the way He deals with men. Some people think the way of the Lord here refers to sort of following His ethical, moral standards. And to me, it makes more sense that the way of God here refers to the way he deals with men. Because line B of the way of the Lord would be destruction to evildoers, that doesn't make sense if we're talking about God's ethical, moral standards. How would that be destruction to evildoers? They're not following those standards. But it does make sense if the way of the Lord just simply refers to the way God runs the show. His ways. So his ways, what he does, they are a fortress. They're a stronghold to the blameless. But the way he responds to evildoers is there's going to be destruction. There's going to be judgment come upon them. Sometimes it's not that we forget that God judges wickedness, but sometimes we look around and wonder when, maybe when that'll happen. It will. God will judge all wickedness. He's aware of it. He cares. He always does what's right. Then we have verse 30, which we have another picture of the security that righteousness brings, the destruction of sorrow, especially in the context of ancient Israel. The righteous will never be removed, but the wicked will not dwell in the land. You think about the ancient Israelites reading this and King Solomon writing this. God would not allow wickedness to defile the promised land forever without intervening, would he? And he didn't, did he? The Israelites were removed from the land. They were driven into captivity. They were taken away. So we see a very literal fulfillment of this proverb, I think, in the Assyrian and Babylonian captivities. All right, let's look at the last two verses here. Verse 31, we're back to speech now. That's where we started. The mouth of the righteous brings forth wisdom, but the perverse tongue will be cut off. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked what is perverse. In verse 31, we see this phrase brings forth. The mouth of the righteous brings forth wisdom. Earlier, he described our words like little shepherds. Now, he describes them like being fruit produced. The word for bring forth here, the root idea of this word is to germinate or to sprout or to bear fruit. So it's really picturesque, and it really makes a lot of sense with line B and this term you see where the perverse tongue will be cut off. That phrase cut off was sometimes used in the Old Testament for cutting down a tree or cutting down some grape clusters or those sorts of things. So the picture here is that we want our words to be growing and producing fruit, not being cut down, not being cut off. It's a really great picture here. Being cut off is also used as a metaphor of God's judgment sometimes as well. So you can kind of throw that in here and think about that. Verse 32 obviously has the same theme of the speech. Righteous knows what's acceptable, the mouth of the wicked, what is perverse. One author said, our words can outlive us and confer life to others, or they can die before they reach the end of our tongues and produce nothing. When I read that comment and thinking about the fruit being produced by the words, I thought back to the sermon Sunday in 2 Peter, where Peter wanted to give them such good reminders and such strong remembrances that even long after his death, they would still remember the truths that he taught. And we sort of see that in Proverbs here, is that are we saying things that are shepherding people, that are producing fruit, that might even produce fruit long after we're gone? Or are our words and our speech needing to be cut off and just thrown in the fire? So, we saw these three themes tonight. speech, sluggard, and security. Are you wise? Are your words shepherding others and bringing forth fruit? Does your work ethic or lack thereof irritate others? And then the last, do you enjoy the security of righteousness? And I hope you know that the only way you can be righteous is to be covered in the righteousness of Christ through faith. Without Jesus Christ, what are our righteousnesses? Filthy rags. We can't do enough to please God. That's not what Solomon's talking about in here. Without Christ, we're dirty. Our best we can offer is filthy rags. But with Christ, we're not only cleansed of our sins and we're made righteous in Him, but then our service for God is pleasing to Him. He's pleased when His children obey, when we live the way He's designed us to live. Which is what Proverbs is about, living in the fear of God. And when you do that, there's a safety and a security and a peace and a stability that wicked people just don't enjoy. They may have more money than you, but you're wealthier.